fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth for the second hour. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. Tonight we're going to have a couple of hours of rebroadcast. The first hour will be about the Chicago power structure. Charlotte and I had a very livid one-hour discussion. And it sort of broke down the Chicago structure up there, the power structure itself. And it was very interesting. And then the second hour, I interviewed Gerard Williams from France. And he's the author of Grey Wolf and also a movie by the same name that he actually produced down in Argentina. And that is about, the movie is about, and the book is about Adolf Hitler escaping at the end of World War II from his bunker in Berlin and retiring and living down in Argentina until he died in the 60s, early 60s. So anyway, these are two very well-produced programs over the years that we're pulling out of the past and presenting those to you. So you'll have a little insight about what we've covered over nearly 10 years of broadcast. So anyway, we've had this attack in Munich. We've had a shooting in a mall over there, the Olympia Mall. There's 1 to 3 shooters. One is possibly dead, took his own life. We don't know for sure. We'll know more about it by Saturday. But we've only had fresh reports that came out yesterday, and they're still investigating. So that's ongoing, and we'll find more out about that. I'm writing 2 articles. One is Turkey Intrigue. It's about the situation in Turkey. And then the second one is called Commies versus Cronies. And that one, the Commies versus Cronies, is about the funding of the communist movement worldwide by the ultra-capitalist. Now, getting back to this Turkey intrigue, that's very current. We've had a coup that was put down recently by Erdogan, the president of Turkey. Now, the president of Turkey has quite a lot of power. The prime minister is still running the government on a day-to-day basis in their system. They have a unicameral system with the General Assembly. In about 2002 period, Erdogan, along with Gulen, actually 2001, they established the party that eventually took over the General Assembly, Gulen and Erdogan. And then they went in there and appointed and elected him later as Prime Minister, Erdogan. Well, Erdogan and Gulen got along fairly well until 2013. But during this period of time, early on, of Erdogan's Prime Ministership, you could say, he began to consolidate his power. And basically, what's happening in Egypt today is that In the early 1900s, you had the Young Turks, okay? The Young Turks were a Masonic-based movement out of Greece, Salonika, Greece. Thessalonica. And they came in and started revolting against the Ottoman Empire, and eventually it culminated in Ataturk establishing a secular government in Turkey that was apart and separate from Islam. Now, what basically happened was that Ataturk and his generals that came ashore and eventually attained victory were also Masons, Freemasons. And so the first Masonic lodge, as far as we know, was established in Istanbul in the mid-1700s. And then from then on, they flourished in Turkey. So unknown to most people, Turkey, since Ataturk, the 1923 takeover and establishment of the Ataturk government, has been under the control of the Masons, the Freemasons in Turkey. Now, there was another organization created separate and apart from that secular government. What they did was, the secular government of Turkey was described by what they call the ideology of six eras, and republicanism, nationalism, populism, secularism, statism, and then at the last, the sixth one would be revolutionism. Okay, but really, what Ataturk did was take and separate the government totally from Islam, and made Islam a separate and apart, with no power over governmental operations and regulations and so forth. Now, and what basically happened was that Erdogan comes in from a right, a hard right, orthodox Islam viewpoint, and he immediately, after he took over the General Assembly, he was able to effect certain changes that began to diminish the military's power in Turkey. And so the pushback came in the form of Erdogan and sledgehammer operations. Now, what basically manifested after that happened, Erdogan and sledgehammer were the two concepts that we've got to talk about here at this introduction to our weekend program. But they were like gladio type of operations. Now, what I mean by gladio is a term coming out of Europe, and especially Italy. And basically, after World War II, there were certain left behind operation units that were left in Eastern Europe to eventually foment a revolution against the Russian regime that was occupying those Eastern Bloc. But also in the Western European countries, there were black operation units established within deep intelligence services in the NATO countries. And what those deep, dark, black operations units started doing was terrorizing those countries with terrorist operations. And then those terrorist operations would blame the local communist, you could say, cell group, especially so in the Red Brigade in Italy and the Baader-Meinhof in Germany. So there's an excellent book written on this by Gassner, Dr. Gassner, the NATO Secret Army is the title of that book. You might look for that on Amazon. But basically, Turkey, being a NATO member, got caught up in this dynamic of this gladio type of operations. So those that were in power since 1923, and then especially after World War II, they started operating these gladio operations and created a deep state in Turkey. Now, Erdogan comes along from a hard right Islamic perspective, and he starts confronting some of this, and so they start pushing back. And the struggle, since he became prime minister in 2003, has been these two Secret Society, Good Old Boy Network versus Erdogan, who is slowly replacing places of power, positions of power. He's replacing the Freemasons and the Good Old Boy Network with a Muslim colleagues, you could say. Now, this is not that well known, what I'm talking about here. And I started studying this a while back, 3 years ago. I was going to write an article about Turkey, and I wanted to know more about that, about Turkey, see. And so it occurred to me that I had to dig down into this subject, and I believe I've come up with some interesting thoughts here. What happened? Ataturk created the Presidency of Religious Affairs, also called the Diyanet. And it's a state within a state, and it's being used by the secular state to continue the dominance of the secular state within Turkey. So basically what Ataturk did was he created a pure secular state based on the six eras, and then in addition he created the Presidency of Religious Affairs, which isolated the Muslim Islamic element believers, which was 99% of the people in Turkey, into this Presidency of Religious Affairs, which has grown to well over 100,000 employees. So you have this large bureaucracy called the Presidency of Religious Affairs administering with a really large budget. That budget is going to be $4.5 billion in the fiscal year 2016. So you can imagine it's one of the largest budgets in Turkey of any agency or group or institution. So basically they've isolated those religiously oriented people into this Presidency of Religious Affairs. Now also the presidency, what's happened in Turkey is that we go back to 2013. And this is where Gulen, who is today being accused of fomenting this military coup in Turkey by Erdogan, what Gulen had done since he gained power through Erdogan in Turkey was establish a lot of schools there and madrasas and so forth in schools. And he started acquiring with the money that he was generating from these schools and so forth, a large number of businesses. So Gulen has created a tremendous network throughout the world, much less in Turkey. And also many of the members of the military and police forces over there were considered to be Gulenist. They call themselves that instead of Freemasonry because that is being hidden as the overall umbrella organization for the insiders that still are in control to a degree in Turkey, but are quickly losing that control to Erdogan, who is quickly moving against that network, that secret society network, to consolidate his power and extend his power in Turkey. So that's basically what we're seeing unfold in Turkey. But your reporters out here in your mainline press have no idea, and they're not reporting this because they're owned by the big money. Now the big money is in control of their job, so they're limited. Now Mustafa Koç, being one of the biggest businessmen in Turkey, okay, he was also on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. So a very powerful man. He came from the family that had attained the greatest conglomerate and largest enterprise in Turkey. Well, he begins to have conflicts with Erdogan. And what happened, what it stems back to is that in 2013, under the sanctions, there were sanctions imposed on Iran as far as trading with Iran. So, to get around that and start making money, Erdogan and his family, so to speak, family members or whoever. There's great investigation here, so there's facts to back up what I'm saying right now. But it appears through investigations that have been done and insiders' knowledge that the government there, that was then control of by Erdogan started trading with Iran. And around before 2013, the actual scandal broke at 2013. Before that, they were trading with Iran, and basically they were buying gas and fuel, gasoline, and natural gas products from Iran for gold. And they were so, and then the Iranians could take that gold and switch and convert it into currency to pay their bills and for trade and so forth. So what was happening was Turkey was circumventing, you could say, the sanctions that had been imposed on Iran for nuclear development, possibly of weapons of mass destruction. And so there was a contingent, Americans and other Western powers were really upset about this. Now, in 2013, this was exposed. There were people arrested. One man was arrested, had $4.5 million in shoeboxes in his home. Later on, he would be exonerated through a very corrupt system and restored, the money was restored to him. So basically, there were many arrests. Erdogan issued many arrest warrants during this period of time when the exposure of this oil for gold, scandal broke. And he was arresting dozens of reporters who was outing this story, trying to go against Erdogan. So he put in prison and in jail dozens, virtually dozens, of well-meaning, loyal Turkish reporters who meant to do the best for Turkey in those circumstances. Well, what's happened since then, just recently, there's been this military coup, and it was carried out against Erdogan's government, and it looked real to me. There were people said that it was had false flag, you know, characteristics, but it looked real to me. There were real tanks in there. There were, and so Erdogan today, between 50 to 70,000 people's lives are being disrupted by being detained, being arrested, losing their jobs, suspension of their positions in the government. And there's military, and it goes into education and their intelligence operation and the staff of the presidential staff. They're just laying off. And we believe that they're moving everyone out that had Gulenist, who was connected to Gulen. And so then they're also making a request for Gulen to be extradited to Turkey because they believe that he was behind this latest military coup. So that's basically what's going on in Turkey, and I'll be finished with that article fairly soon, and I'll have it up there on my page, thesecrettruth.com, and you can read that. It goes into detail. There's click-offs there that will take you to other websites that give you some factual backup for what we're saying in this article. Basically, what we're saying in this article is that Erdogan is headed towards a dictatorship, and he's taking out his good old boy secret society opposition, and substituting for those people and replacing them with his Muslim-backed, religious-backed, supporters. He's done very dreadful things to his opponents. There was one rally there in Giza Park, and he gassed them and pepper sprayed them and all this other thing. And Mustafa Kock, of all things, they owned a hotel close by to that square and that park, and they gave shelter to some of the people that were at that rally. And then before you knew it, Erdogan's government accused Kock and them and his company of sheltering terrorists, say. And so, and Kock and them were just doing humanitarian work in the hotel, helping them get cleaned up from the gas, you know, and the pepper spray. So, the big interests there are not on Erdogan's side, but with the power of government, he started coming back against the Kock interest with penalties and auditing and so forth and so on, and even caused them to lose a $1.6 billion shipbuilding contract. So Erdogan has built a big palatial presidential palace. It's supposed to have over 1,100 rooms. It's got a highly secure operation center in there. He's dovetailing his MIT information, you could say equivalent to NSA and CIA, into that complex. And so he's not going to go away, and he may end up, you know, not moving out of that presidential palace. And he's trying to reestablish the Ottoman Empire is what, to me, is what I believe that he's trying to reestablish. But anyway, those are the 2 hours. The first hour is about the Chicago power structure. Then the second hour, you'll be able to pick up on that with Gerard Williams, and really get some fine information there, and we can go from there. But thank you for listening tonight and being with us. We certainly do appreciate your attention to our programming. We're doing some rebroadcasts right now. We're going to be doing some new production. So stay with us, and we'll be out here in radio land with some fresh programming very soon. But thank you very much for listening and being such loyal and accommodating and you could say listening listeners in our listening audience. So anyway, we've got this programming coming up in just a second here, and the first and second hour will be, the first hour will be about 39 minutes. The second hour will be a full hour of interview. So thank you very much for listening. And let's take it away right now then.
All right, George, we're back.
What's that number? What is one? So our lines are open. Oh, Charlotte, right above this program time here, this segment of it, I mean, actually portion on our website. You remember that 9/11 explosive evidence that they broadcast out in Colorado?
I sure do.
Well, right below there is what they call Operation Terror. Richard Gage is on track again. And this Sunday evening, there's going to be a screening of this, okay? And it was the one banned by theaters. It's coming to Berkeley, California, okay? And you know who's going to host it? Okay, here's where it's going to be. It's going to be at the Bonnie Faulkner of Guns and Butters will host at the Historic Fellowship Hall. That's at 1921 Cedar Street at Bonita Avenue, Berkeley, California. It's one block east of MLK Way, three blocks west of Shattuck Avenue. Wheelchair accessibility, yes, the ramp is on Bonita Street. It's $10 at the door or order tickets online. Well, Bonnie Faulkner is the only one with guts enough out there on public radio to stand up for 9/11 truth, Charlotte.
Well, that we're aware of. This is certainly fabulous news.
This is good. It says here that the exclusive question and answers afterwards with the film's producer, Art Oliver, and Richard Gage. He's American architect and engineer, 9/11 truth. That's it. Boy, I tell you what, that should be pretty good. It's a movie. It's a fictionalized deal, movie, but it has the 9/11, you know what I mean, type built into it. That's basically what they've got going there.
Okay.
I think that's going to be great. Our lines are open, so 1-800-259-5791. Getting back to this Chicago gang, I guess what you could say. You know, we left out Al Capone, Charlotte, didn't we? Huh?
Well,
that's just another big, big crime character there, personality there in Chicago.
Yeah, and what did he benefit from? Prohibition, is that not correct?
I wonder if Chicago
is still benefiting from prohibition of other substances.
Well, right now, the drug cartels have moved in there. You're right, because it's not legalized. And that's why the drug cartels don't want to legalize drugs at all, do they?
No, of course not.
Because, as long as it's illegal, it's, hard to get hold of, and there are street gangs and stuff like that. And they're having big street gang murders up there. The murder rate has jumped tremendously in the last year or two. in Chicago, and they alluded to the street gang, the drug gangs up there, fighting each other on turf battles and things like that. So,
It's certainly a tragedy for the people that live there, that are caught in the crossfires of this horrific war.
Right. There's over 9 million people in the greater metropolitan area up there. And so both the dailies, when they were running Chicago, and the thing is that now that that Rahm Emanuel is in there, he's right there along with the dailies. I mean, you know, they're all together. They know each other. So they're all working together in that area. The dailies have their foundation of power, you could say, has been the Democratic Party up there. And you know the story about JFK, them tombstoning Chicago and the Midwest there, Illinois, for JFK. And his father, Joseph Kennedy, went in there and made a deal with them. And they got labor. You got unions to help. So you talk about a tremendous area of corruption. I would point to that as the number one area in the country as a model of corruption, you know. And so, I mean, go in and click off on these stories and these hypertext links, and you begin to see why we're in trouble. What do you think, Charlotte?
I think you did an excellent job of putting together this research trail, and anybody, we all would benefit from knowing what you know about this, George, and it's just a fabulous piece of research. I don't know what else to tell you. It's almost a prelude to a book.
Well, what I started doing on this was I had to stop somewhere, you know. But I just started getting story after story. And there are great, Sinclair Lewis wrote a novel about, this corruption in meatpacking up there in Chicago area. And today I was researching just on meatpacking alone in the stockyards. And the poorest of the poor in Chicago live right next to the stockyards, okay? But there were so many cattle there, and even after Civil War, there was a million head of cattle slaughtered there a year. So you could imagine the waste and everything else that Chicagoans had to deal with and the stench from that. So all the poor neighborhoods, and some of those were Irish, by the way, were right next to the stockyards. Okay? And the rich people lived up in the northern part, northwest and west part of Chicago. And but the south itself was the industrial area, and that's where the stockyards were. So I don't know. Did you ever fly into Chicago lately?
No, I haven't been there for a couple decades.
It's real flat up there, and all of a sudden you see these gigantic skyscrapers just shooting up from along the shore of Lake Michigan. There, I mean, it's just and you see block after block of residential area, heavily wooded, in fact. It's got trees everywhere. It's just not open, you know. But there's block after block of residential areas, you know, radiating away to the west, to the south. You know, the Lake Michigan is on the east side, so the building was to the north and to the west and to the south and the southwest and so forth. But so the east was all water, you know. But
yeah,
it's
and there's
amazing.
Very... long American history, and there's some very ancient, I don't want to use the word ancient, but you know, a lot of American history there.
One of the things about these cattle, you know, these cattle yards and stuff, was they began to get a monopoly on meat then and meat packing, and so that's where the middleman had come in and separated the farmer or the cattleman from his product, whether it's a crop or cattle or whatever, and then made a pretty good profit as a middleman of rendering and so forth, and canning and so forth. And so, and that's where the farmers really suffered at times, because they just beat them down to the last dollar that they had, you know, and they would take anything, whatever the market was, you know, and they believed that sometimes these markets were legitimate. In many cases, they were being fixed by these middlemen, these market makers. So today they've consolidated a bunch of these markets into their own hands here. And also, there was one little detail on that, Charlotte, that I forgot to mention, on the consolidation of the markets here under this new CEM group, is that it said right at the end down here, it was the next to last paragraph, CEM Group is the world's largest future exchanges has announced. Let me see if I've got time here. Yeah. I'll announce it when I come back because it's a very important point of what they're accepting as a currency for trading on that exchange. And you're beginning to see what David Rubenstein said about China is the model of... Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host.
Charlotte Littlefield. George, before you get on to the that key component concerning the Chinese currency, did you know that Chicago is world headquarters for many corporations? For example, the True Value Hardware Company. We're talking about the CME Group considers Chicago their global headquarters. We're talking Boeing. We're talking, I got a list here that's, you know, you're going to recognize these names.
Yeah, go ahead. Read it to the list. I want to hear it. Yeah. What's the list?
Abbott Labs, Advocate, Allstate, Aon, Baxter, okay, this very medical, Boeing, CNA, which is a financial corporation, Dominick's Food Stores, Equity Office for Trust Properties Real Estate, Exelon, an energy company, Fortune Brands, Illinois Toolworks. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Kraft Foods, McDonald's, Miller's.
Well, Sears is out of Chicago, too.
Yeah, Quaker Food. I mean, we're talking the major food manufacturers, Sears, Walgreens, there's no doubt about it. Chicago is a corporate, you know, utopia.
International. They're internationalists. That's what they are.
Yeah. And Dominick's is a unit of Safeway, by the way, which is a very big, grocer. But anyways, please continue about that important aspect about the Chinese currency.
Yeah, the renminbi, the currency, the Chinese currency, okay? What's happened is that they are accepting, listen to this, CEM Group that has a consolidation of all these markets now in Chicago, as the world's largest futures exchanges has announced that the company will allow international investors to use the Chinese currency renminbi as collateral for trading in all of its future products starting January 2012. So that was just a change at the first of this year then, and accepting Chinese renminbis for trading. And the renminbi, RMB sign, is the official currency of China. It would be the People's Republic of China is what it's called. The renminbi is legal tender in mainland China, but not in Hong Kong, Taiwan, or Macau. It is issued by the People's Bank of China, the Monetary Authority of China. Its name simplifies Chinese. It gives the pictograms and so forth. It means the people's currency. The primary unit of the renminbi is the yuan. The one yuan is subdivided into 10 units, which in turn is subdivided into 10 others. So you get down to what a cent is. Zhao. Is what I said, I believe it is, if I'm pronouncing it right. But anyway, that gives you an idea of where they're headed towards dealing with this, reserve that China has accumulated. They're going to open up their trading in renminbis and take off. And when we accept renminbi, come over here, buy our products, and see what that could easily do is transform the oil industry and being traded in renminbis, Charlotte.
Not surprised.
That's probably where we're headed because of this. They've allowed it, see?
Yeah. I mean, we got technology here, too. We got Motorola. They got like $30 billion in annual sales minimum. That was way back in, that's a 2008 number. So big money, huge global consequences for currencies with those futures that you're discussing. Wow.
It's just mind-boggling. I never thought Chicago wielded that much power, but my gosh, when you start digging into it, it becomes obvious that, man, I don't know about New York anymore. New York has always been a world financial center because of the big international banks there, and it still is. Wall Street, seeing all that. But Chicago is beginning to transform itself over a number of decades into not only the business center, but the financial center of the country is certainly a trading center now with this consolidation in the CEM group, isn't it?
Yeah, and perhaps this is a place to sort of lay lower and not attract so much attention.
You know, it could be. One of the reasons the farm and agricultural base right there in the Midwest was just an ideal, that coupled with the meat slaughtering and the livestock yards and so forth, that's what built Chicago right there. And the demand for meat and so forth, and really when they got into refrigeration and freezing and so forth, then it multiplied their efforts. Even though by then, I think that had been decentralized, much of the slaughtering and so forth was being done throughout the country in different slaughter yards and stock yards, see. So it wasn't as much. It was really big after the Civil War, 1865 and onward, until the turn of the century. Then it started becoming decentralized after that, but by then it had pretty well made Chicago what it is today. Anyway, we're going to move on. Let's see here. Last week, Charlotte, we got really good response on the ideas, the power of ideas. And I don't know if you got any feedback yourself from any of your own listeners, but we're beginning to get an international listening audience out there. The people that can't hear us here in Austin, Texas on our air broadcast are beginning to tune in on the web, and we're getting people that are joining in from Venezuela and let's see, what else? What other country did I say that we had people coming in, Charlotte? Indonesia. That's right. We've had people come in and join our site, The Secret Truth on Facebook, okay, from The Secret Truth Radio is what it's called. And the last lady that joined in with us was Indonesian. The fellow before that, Jorge before that, I won't say any last names, was out of Venezuela. And then Missy lady, where is she from? She didn't say where she's really from. Well, it looks like she's from Africa, Charlotte. Anyway,
that's awesome.
We're beginning to get people from all over the world. My gosh! And the lady before that, where is she from? Some of these are really limited, you know, because we're not. Las Vegas. Okay, I think it's Las Vegas or something. Anyway,
sure. And we're getting plenty
people.
Of likes on our Facebook page. And, back to Chicago,
right.
I don't mean to leave it too far. I know we're trying to move on, but it is the third largest metropolitan area in the United States. I mean, that is a huge.
Yes, it is. That's for sure. But the city proper is only a couple of million, but when you move out of that into the greater metropolitan area, it gets up to over 9 million people. So what they're saying about this drug dealing, Charlotte, is that there's a large Hispanic population up there that these drug dealers can hide behind and inside of. Okay.
Well, we're assuming that they're, who the middlemen are up here.
and the transportation or the transfer out of Chicago, the distribution points out of Chicago into Canada are ideal either to the east or to the west, say Alberta, British Columbia, on up to Quebec and Toronto and all that into Canada. So they're using Chicago as a base of operations. It's being put out by DEA agents for dealing not only to throughout the country here, but into Canada. We're going to get off the line here a second. We've got a break coming, and then we'll have two more
segments.
Yeah, let me
tell you about the Manhattan Project when we come back to it. It's tied to Chicago, too.
Oh, that's right. Let's get into that. That was Manhattan Project in Chicago. Yeah, we'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host.
Charlotte Littlefield, Georgia, December 2nd, 1942, physicist Enrico Fermi conducted the world's, what we think to be the world's first controlled nuclear reaction at the University of Chicago. It was part of the top secret Manhattan Project.
The
other thing about...
stadium is underneath the football stadium there. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and that went on to be used, of course, in World War II. Also, the other thing about Chicago, you know, location, 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 as far as our Industrial Revolution goes, it's rail yards connected east to west. It was, you know, you virtually
Well, yeah, one
you know,
of the first rail lines was between New York and Chicago. Yeah, right in there. Hey, let me tell you something else, too, that's important that I began to delve into, but I never got far with it. Oh, let me add one little detail to the Manhattan Project. Back in 1939, and it carried on for a number of years, it cost $2 billion, which is roughly $25.8 billion in 2012 dollars, okay? So it was a very, very costly project, and they just threw everything in there. They studied five different technologies. But getting back to Chicago, there's a tremendous port facilities there for the Great Lakes. So they're not only port facilities. I started studying this, this, and that. My gosh, I don't know who owns all that stuff, Charlotte. You know, Burien. Remember Burien, Walter Burien?
I sure do.
Well, you know, he
CPR?
Always got into this corporate stuff. Smell in Chicago. What I smell in Chicago are a lot of quasi-public corporations and entities created that are privately owned. That's what I think. I just haven't gotten that far into it yet. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it could be, George. You got a good nose for these kind of things.
And I think the port facilities, and you know, when I started examining and going delving into the City of London, I began to understand, my God, they own the port. They own the port there, the port. You know? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They actually own the port there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, they have assets, they have value there. The City of London is a corporation privately owned, by the way. That financial center there, a little over a square mile, not in, you know, a square mile, but a square mile of land, you know, in size. So that's what I think on this, but I haven't had the time to delve into that. And Valerie Jarrett is around and working for many of these different entities. She actually became one of the directors of the Chicago Medical Center, and before you knew it, Michelle Obama had a $300,000 job over there. There's a new book entitled Leading from Behind by Richard Mentier. I was trying to get him on for a program tonight, just couldn't get it done. His publicist, his book, you know, and all this, Penguin and all them, they never got back with me. So they're not doing too good a job. They didn't tell me anything at all. Perhaps he didn't reply. Might be very busy at this time. But he tells a story about Valerie Jarrett giving, you know, Michelle Obama her first job there in Daley's office, and then later on opening up a position at the medical center there that they were paying her $300,000 a year. And the story goes that the left up there was looking around for a black man, so to speak, to run for president. And Jesse Jackson wanted to do it. He was out. He had problems, too controversial. His son was not suitable at the time because he had some legal problems. But then they started looking at Barack Obama and said, man, this guy would be a good candidate. And then they got married and they got her into the Daley, you know, office there. And then later on they gave her that big job at the medical center. And then they put her on the board of the, CFR group there in Chicago, and they built them up. They built those people. They created those people, Charlotte, that big money up there.
That's how it works, right?
And the way the story goes now, and it's looking that's pretty reliable, Dreams of My Real Father, that documentary recently, okay, is establishing and is trying to, and it had a lot of good evidence as far as I was concerned, that Barack Obama was hiding who his real father was, because I believe many of your middle and moderate Democrats would not have voted for him with the connection to, we think that Frank Marshall Davis there, who was a avowed Marxist communist living in Hawaii, is Barack Obama's real father. And if that is true, then that wouldn't have gone down with your very moderate Democrats. They would have never voted him into office. He would have never made it. So the way the thinking is now is that he hid the fact of his real father and brought this this Kenyan forward as his father, but he could not create a legitimate birth certificate showing that that man is his real father, so they forged one. And that's where they went wrong. Lord Mockton, Thursday night, had about a 10-page presentation there that he handed out to everyone. And he went thoroughly through it. He's established the fact that it's a forgery. Of course, you know, you and I have interviewed several people. Alex tore it to pieces. We got into it some enough to show that it had flagrant, very amateurish, you know what I mean, put together, you know what I mean? And so it was not a very good forgery, in fact. But it looks like that's the way the story goes. He was intelligence-based, very close to the CIA. He worked for a front CIA company. There's a controversy about his records here and there in Colombia. There's these fake photographs of him and his grandfather and grandmother up in New York sitting on a bench in a, you know, area in New York City. It's fake. It's a collage. There's other photographs of the family. So, you know, his background has been created, to a certain extent. And so, to sell the public, the intelligence, big money, ultra-capitalist, put him in. And, they gave him a little bit of a Marxist, communist, collectivist type of you know what I mean, background, ideology, to pull forward those liberal left people on the democratic left, so to speak. And, they love him because, he caters to them and they really are sold on him. But, it's nothing that's authentic and it's not sincere because he'll come in there and pull all these Goldman Sachs people into office with him. You know, they're his aides, they're his treasury secretaries and all that other stuff. And then he goes over there and gives them trillions of dollars through the Fed of credit, criminally, on criminal basis. They had no authority and on a secret basis. So, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about big Chicago politics, the power of politics and power of money, aren't we, Charlotte?
Yep, and unfortunately, it's a Democrat and Republican problem. We've got nowhere to turn on this one.
Well, on this one, the last administration tried to tell us that 9/11 was a truthful attack on this country, which was a bald-faced lie when you look at the evidence. So little George W. Bush's deal is a fake. That's a fake story, 9/11. Now, they're using that 9/11 myth to destroy the country and take the general public down, you know, a national police security state path. And it's tragic what's happened to America.
You know, and what's the dynamic here, George, is that as this is occurring, technology marches forward, you know, the technology that could be used to, you know, progress humanity. And we've got these serious, serious ethical and moral dilemmas with technology that are not being addressed. It's simply being implemented, not necessarily for the good of the people. And it's a tragedy that these things are we're swift. It's like we're going through the whitewater rapids of towards the police state and towards the use of technology and design and engineering in a way that it does not serve the people, but it serves the power elite, the people. You know, it serves a small handful of people rather than the larger global community of human beings.
Right.
The money supply being just a very basic, you know, tool of control.
To
mention how deep this goes, you know, with mind control.
We got 5 seconds, Charlotte. Yeah, those are some good points. So I want you to elaborate on that if we come back a little bit. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with Max Kovo.
Charlotte Littlefield. Yeah, George, you know our tradition of trying to wrap up our program with a positive segment at the end, looking towards solutions?
Yeah.
Perhaps that'd be better if I didn't, go negative on us. And let's talk about some of the things that, you know, we can do.
Okay, one of the most positive things is to listen to the secrettruth.com radio program.
Absolutely.
Huh? We've been at it. November 1st, we will have been on the air for, 6 years, Charlotte?
Yep.
Now, we've interviewed a plethora of different, various kinds of guests all over the place. Now, I'm sorry we couldn't get Dr. Rossi on tonight. There were some technical problems that kept us from doing that. But we'll try to get him on next week or some other future date. But, you know, the public, though, is still in this delusion, Charlotte, aren't they?
Well, you know, again, as I always say when you use the word delusion, that word has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. And but to say that they're trapped within the mindset of the status quo, you know, maybe it's one way to put it, or they're not thinking independent thoughts for themselves. They're thinking what they're told to think because they've, you know, been hypnotized by the television, the media, the
social pressures. Yeah,
they've been hypnotized.
That's another way to look at it.
Yeah. And so to break free of the status quo and to think independently for our solutions and for, you know, like they say, freedom, really the drama of the larger is the drama within the human soul, you know, and it's to work on ourselves and to
spend our
money.
Well, that's true. The problem is it lies within us, does it not?
You frequently say that, George, and I do agree with you.
And
think
that's
that,
it. We can only get it straight with ourselves, then the world would be a better place.
Well, and that's really, in the end, all we control is our reaction to these things and our ethical behavior in response to these things, these various quagmires of control and the traps that are set for us in life.
Well, you know the traps, that's why Chicago is a big trap, isn't it?
That's one way to look at it, for sure.
But
how
you
would
see,
you
see, in other words,
that?
The idea that people are captivated by and captured by, well, that's a good model up there of a big trap, a mind trap, right? See, that's really what we're talking about. That's what we've been doing for 6 years, seems like to me, is trying to identify the real essence of the problem, and it points back at us, right?
Yeah, whenever there's an old saying, every time you're pointing a finger out at something or somebody or something else, there's always three others pointing back at you.
Oh, I've got it down now. All five of my fingers point straight ahead, sure.
Oh, there you go.
Well, now
then
I don't get any
of
pointing back, right?
Wouldn't that be
shaking
hands?
It's not
me.
It's them, right?
Yeah.
Or say it another way, I'm okay. They're no good. But, I mean, yeah, there was a book called I'm Okay, You're Okay. Remember that?
Vaguely, yes, I do.
Yeah, we went through the human potential movement era where they wrote all these self-help books. And that was one of them I read, you know?
Yeah, I think that's experiencing a reboom. that was a new word. I just invented it.
Well, human psychology was what started that. See?
Yeah, well, I say there's a return to that.
Yeah,
actually,
humanism,
you know, there's
see?
A lot of that.
Humanistic psychology was what gave blossom to. What happened was they converted that into the human potential movement, changed it a little bit, and marketed it. It marketed better with that kind of label on it. See.
Hey, well, a lot of times in these troubled times when you have financial ruin, you're under great physical illness or stress, and families are being strained, you know, it's important that we, you know, try to educate ourselves and learn the tools that we need to maneuver through these things, you know, the landmines of life. And so I think there's a resurgence in the self-help movement myself. I go to Barnes & Noble. I go to a lot of bookstores, privately owned and chain stores. And there's always a huge self-help area still to this day.
There's a huge what now area?
Self-help.
Self-help. Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Well,
Dr. Phil of the world, if you will.
Okay, we're going positive, right? Let's go positive then. So we look at this self-help, and if you look at it on a synergistic basis, so you get your body healthful away from the GMO and all that, good water and stuff. You get
all
good
that.
Ideas and good thoughts in your You get good ideas and thoughts into your head, into your mind, right?
Yeah, let's
start going out and creating.
Let's slow down and spend a little bit of time on what you called all that. Clean drinking water. You need to get the chemicals out of your drinking water. not only staying away from the GMOs, but staying away from the known hazards like MSG, the allergens, the food additives, that, you know, the processed foods. Gravitate towards whole foods, healthy eating, clean water, clean air, okay? Those are, like, very basic things that you could do to take care of your body. Now, that was all that. And then, George, you were talking about the purity of the mind, feeding your mind, knowledge and power and information. It's empowering to learn about the world and how it functions.
Well, but see, that word empower, you know, that I would differ a little bit on that. What I see is that you must learn not to seek power. See?
Okay, but, well, when I say empower,
here's
I mean,
a way to talk about it, Charlotte. Self-governance, oneself.
There we go. There we go. There we go.
That's it right there. Because if the problem is internally, and it is, it's an internal problem, then it must be that we must learn how to govern ourselves better, right?
Yes, and not allow the herd to be overtaken by sociopaths and psychopaths.
Psychopathic behavior. That's what, I mean, right. You look at the big city, Chicago, they've got people running around there mad. Money, 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 everything, power, right?
Well, there's a psychologist that was groundbreaking in their group psychology. They had a huge influence on corporate behavior, et cetera, where you talk about the people that go to the World Economic Summit and, you know, that they're being brainwashed while they're there. What was that psychologist's name?
Kurt Lewin, right. It was like group,
there we go.
Group psychology or group management.
Right. Now, I would think that would be one area we could focus on that would help us make sure that the psychopaths, sociopaths do not get into power. As a group, as a team of human beings, you know, we got to start working together to make sure that the good guys,
hey,
the leadership.
You know what, Charlotte? There might be a gene defect that creates that's a characteristic of a psychopath or sociopath.
Right. What the smaller? What's that part of the brain that the emotions reside in?
There could be a genetic marker in there in our DNA.
And that's kind of scary, George. That's kind of scary that we would say that, you know, there are people like biologists.
The thing is, you can't lay it off on biology totally. Otherwise, you're copying
self
behavior, self change. See
right.
What I mean?
Absolutely.
The self-responsibility, see. But,
right. No, your genes get activated by your thoughts and your behaviors and the things you put in your body. Genes do not control you. You control gene activation. You're not a victim of your genes. Very few people that come down with cancer actually have the genetic disposition towards it, something like 1% to 2%. So what about all these other, what about the other 98% of people with a genetic disposition towards cancer who do not develop it? We activate our genes. We are not victims of our genes. And I'm trying to think of the biologist. I studied him a few years back. He's very important in conveying that information that we are not the victims of our genes.
I can't lay off my bad behavior on my genes, Charlotte.
No, you can't blame it on that. You got to take personal responsibility.
Oh, man, I thought I had a cop-out going.
But it's scary that we could identify potential psychopaths and sociopaths based on genetic, because that would be the wrong course of action to assume those people.
Well, the thing is, what they should do is take these people and study their DNA, see if it has some kind of a characteristic where they were changed into something. See what I mean? Could that be the case?
Okay. For nefarious purposes, like there was some sort of...
what I'm saying is that there could be a... We know that there's personality differences, right?
Okay? Sure.
And so we know that those personality differences have to do with how we were brought up, traumatized, or whatever, you know, sometimes. So, and some physical, I guess, genetic thing that might be there, too. But we've been traumatized, abused, and so forth, and we have different personalities, you know. But anyway, that's a whole different theory again. We're coming to the end of the program. Charlotte, I want to thank you for helping me wade through all this material. And our listening audience, we bless each and every one of you. We value each and every one of you. And but hey, we're positive. We want them to forgive, don't we, Charlotte, huh?
Yeah, like forgiveness is key.
It is. It's the key to getting that big burden off your back and replenishing and re-cleansing and and re-energizing relationships. Hey,